Good morning, everyone. My name is Martin Suberg. I am the commissioner of the Massachusetts DEP. This is our regular call with wastewater system operators. Kathy Baskin, our assistant commissioner for water programs at Mass DEP, helps facilitate these calls and arranges the technical sides of it, for which we're very appreciative. Leldon Langley's the head of our wastewater program in Mass DEP headquarters. He's joined by a number of his colleagues, both in the Boston office. We have representatives of each of the regional offices on the call just to make sure we're all hearing the same things. And if there's follow-up that we at DEP need to do with you, that we're all plugged in on this. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We're also regularly joined by our colleagues at US EPA, Denny Dart and Jeff Kopp. Denny, I don't know if you have any updates you'd like to offer from EPA Region 1 this morning, but if you did, I invite you to unmute yourself and fill us in.
Hi. Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, I don't have any announcements for today, but Jeff Kopp and I will be on the call available to answer any questions.
Terrific. Thank you. And thanks for joining us. We're also very fortunate. We have John Murphy, who's the chairman of our board of licensure, who has joined us on any of these calls. John, I don't know if there's any updates you'd like to offer, but if so, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself and providing those updates, that would be very welcome.
Yes, thanks, Commissioner. I do have a couple updates today. So I'm going to start with Massachusetts Wastewater Operator Training Program, known as MWOT, for an update for today, and lay out how some of the training program will look this fall. These are the courses run by NUIPIC to prepare operators for the wastewater exam. So in evaluating the situation, we understand the difficulty and safety concerns to put together the in-person group trainings this fall. So the plan is to continue with online training similar to how they ran in June and July. And these are the exam prep courses, and I'll cover some of the TCH courses available a little bit after. But because of this online approach this fall, the board and NUIPIC have been working on developing a checklist of trainings available specific to the grade of exam that the operators will be taking. With the understanding that this fall we'll need a little bit of a different approach to exam prep, we wanted to make sure we put together this checklist for anyone preparing for the exam so they have a roadmap available for the different training opportunities to get themselves ready to pass the exam. So instead of signing up for your typical 6-week basic municipal class, these 6-week courses are now been broken into 2 to 3 hour interval training segments. So this checklist that we're developing will have the dates of each class and lay out all the topics that need to be taken. So the person preparing for the exam can see what areas they have been trained in and what areas still need to be addressed. So it should lay out a pretty straightforward approach for people preparing for the exam. The plan right now is to start with the basic municipal, basic industrial, and lab courses in early September and October, with the advanced courses for higher level exams coming out later in the fall. There is the possibility that some of the advanced courses may be able to meet in a hybrid type setup with online courses for the base of the information, but maybe some small group gatherings to discuss questions and problem solving. Obviously, the advanced courses, as you get into more advanced process control and new techniques, having some open discussion in the classroom may be beneficial. So we are hopefully working towards that. The checklist is not just limited to the MWOT courses. It's also going to show some alternatives. Some of the alternatives are going to include study manuals, workbooks, correspondence courses, and other training organizations. So it's not going to be just that one-stop approach of signing up for, you know, 1 6-week course. It's going to kind of take a different approach of a couple different materials to look at. If you're currently using any materials to prepare operators for exam or courses you think would be helpful, please try to get that to me as soon as possible. And so if anyone wants to send that information to me, I will add it to the checklist. The goal is to get this checklist out the week of August 10th to allow for a time to schedule and plan. And, you know, we also understand that someone may not be able to attend all the segments. So the checklist will give you additional suggestions. There's also other options that aren't kind of your typical approach. you know, when I work with the Upper Cape Technical students, they like to find YouTube videos that help them learn on topics that they may not be aware of. I also recommend reaching out to operators at your facility with questions. You may be able to find other state training programs that are moving to online training, and also using the Wastewater Association as a resource. So with that, kind of talking about the MWOT program, also for those looking for TCH courses for license renewal, there's plenty of opportunities coming out from EPA, NOEA, MOEA, Rural Water, RCAP. A lot of vendor training are available. We don't have a comprehensive list of all of them, but there's plenty available right now at low cost. So, you know, it's a good opportunity to get some of your training hours in now before the end of the renewal cycle. So don't wait, you know, get some of these trainings done now while they're available. So if anyone has any specific questions on, you know, an operator preparing for the exam, it may be easiest to reach out to me directly, and we can come up with a plan on what their background is and what trainings may be needed for them to get ready for the exam. So there's been a few inquiries about the ability to do remote proctoring of the exam. ABC was looking into this prior to the COVID outbreak, so they still haven't been able to transfer everything to the online or the remote proctoring component. They're updating software and migrating data, but we don't have a current timeline on necessarily when that would be available. However, the PSI sites are adhering to the latest safety procedures and recommendations. I'll add the PSI COVID link to the DEP, and I'll add it to the NUIPIC webpage so it's available for review. But they do have test taker protocol with a health questionnaire, face mask required, wearing gloves. When you get to the site, it's potential that you have to wait outside, not in the lobby, just to adhere to social distancing. The test centers have all reduced seating availability, so that's why some people registering for the exam may have to wait a little bit longer. All testing equipment's wiped down with antibacterial after each use. High-touch areas, keyboards, chairs, desktop handles are all sanitized after each use. So the test sites are taking all the necessary protocols to adhere safety for the exam sites. If anyone has taken the exam or had someone take the exam, and if they have an issue with the test center, please let me know immediately, and I'll make sure it's addressed at the test site. That's kind of the layout from PSI.
Okay, John, thank you. That's a lot of very good information. In terms of the checklist and the other resources you were talking about, where can people find that?
The checklist will be available on the DEP website, the NUIPIC website, the COVID website. I can email it out to the distribution list that I've been sending it out to. So I want to make sure we get it in everyone's hands. We'll send it out through the association because it's important that everyone is seeing this, you know, ahead of time, so we can kind of get everyone prepared for the exam this fall.
Okay, that's great. Thanks again, John, for being on the call and bringing this information. We had one question before the meeting about a certain bill, House 4631, which talks about compensation rates for people required to report to a work location outside of their home during the COVID emergency. The answer we got back is that bill is still pending in committee, and I believe that information did get conveyed to the person that originally made the request, and we can put that up on our website. With that, I might ask Kathy if you're getting any questions either through the chat or through emails that we might want to address together.
Good morning, everybody. So we did have a question about sludge disposal. The person thought that it was becoming more difficult to dispose of sludge, and whether others have found the same or if DEP was aware of this. And so we've only heard of a couple of cases where that's happened, but we have put some resources online. First is our guidance on managing wastewater sludge during COVID. And it's on our COVID website already, and that will give you a number of resources to turn to. You may hear from your peers on the call today about other information. And there was an email that came in around BioBot, pointing out that BioBot is one option, but there are other options that are significantly less costly, and that the difference in cost is that BioBot has a model that correlates the rate of occurrence of the COVID RNA in the wastewater with the rate of occurrence of illness out in the community, whereas the other firms just look at the concentration or the rate of occurrence of the RNA in the wastewater. The person commenting just wanted to let folks know that that was out there and available.
Thanks, Kathy. And I will say that I have heard from municipalities, you know, particularly in the western part of the state, about the challenges of sludge management, the number of facilities accepting sludge, the cost. And so I'm aware that this is an issue of growing concern. I don't think there's anything before the department formally, but I know there are some entities that have been in pre-permitting, you know, raising questions with the department. It sounds like NWEPIC is taking a look at this to evaluate the regional capacity for sludge management. I suspect this is a topic we're going to be talking more about, not only with respect to, you know, capacity and cost, but also things like emerging contaminants. I know we sometimes get questions of if we're going to be doing more on PFAS, how does that affect the sludge management picture? We don't have standards. We're starting to look at this area. Our first priority has continued to be PFAS and drinking water, but it is an area that we will be looking at going forward. And it's a challenging area. Evaluating the science in terms of that issue is going to take us some time to do. On the other hand, you may be hearing about some of our efforts to do that as we start bringing experts together, as we start bringing people together whose, you know, job it is to both figure out places to put sludge and manage sludge. I'm aware of that issue. I don't know if anybody from NWEPIC would like to say anything further on that issue.
This is Jen Lichtensteiger from NWEPIC. I've been working on the proposal that the commissioner was talking about. We presented it to the executive committee at NWEPIC, and there's interest from Allstate to support it. What it will do is support a survey that will be coming out this fall on a national level to understand what the capacity is at each of the facilities. And as we get closer and are working with NEBRA, who's leading that effort, we'll let you know what we would like to receive and how the survey will be administered to everyone.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that information. You know, I'm sure we'll be talking about this topic again, the concerns about both where to bring the sludge and how much it costs to address it or significant issues for systems.
We have a couple of other comments. Denny Dart has emailed me with some announcements for technical assistance webinars that are coming up. I'm happy to email the announcements to anybody who would like them. They are for August 18th on BMPs, August 20th, a rebroadcast of DMRs, and September 15th for BMPs for POTWs Part 2. The other one was Part 1. We'll get it out on our own website too, so that folks know about these resources. Someone asked what the other COVID surveillance firms were that were mentioned, and I didn't get that by name from the person who sent the email. So I did inquire, and if I get those during the call, I'll let folks know.
From what little research we've managed to do, you know, there are a number of entities looking at this, and, you know, there are companies, there are academic institutions, and as you, you know, go from state to state, you know, the number of entities looking at wastewater surveillance even grows. Here in Massachusetts, I think we do have BioBot, but we also know there are other groups looking at it. MWRA has some experience. They're obviously working with BioBot, but I know they've been in contact with some of the other groups. So it's a growing area. The Department of Public Health and the Executive Office of Health and Human Services was looking closer at wastewater surveillance and, you know, potentially an approach that looks at a bigger number of communities and someone to partner with. We'll try to have an update on that for our next call. You know, I believe they were getting closer to, publishing an RFR or something like that.
There is also, going back to sludge disposal, Nikki Nowak of Mass Water Environment Association notes that getting rid of sludge is a big issue. The bigger issue is the cost of sludge disposal and the rate of increase. And then somebody comments right below that they are being told to expect a 40% cost increase. Then there's a PFOA, PFOS question, non-COVID, about sewers and landfills.
That's consistent with the experience I heard. Like I said, I first heard about this about 18 months, a little longer ago, when I was visiting some communities out in the western part of the state, and they were talking about those kinds of cost increases. They were talking about facilities that used to be available that they could no longer bring it to. The facilities they could bring it to, costs were going up significantly. And I know from just my own anecdotal work with communities that this is an important issue, and it's really very, very costly. We'll continue to see what opportunities are available. Some of the communities were at the time looking at doing work together, potentially create a facility using anaerobic digestion technology to address sludge. Others are, you know, we're also hearing that there are outside entities, you know, private entities looking to, you know, establish facilities. But I very much, you know, take to heart that it is becoming more difficult and more expensive to dispose of sludge. And so that's something we need to all keep our eyes on. In terms of PFAS, what was the question, Kathy?
Nantucket's PFOA and PFAS issues have hit the paper headlines right now for the airport only. However, sewer and landfill are in the target zone. I am anticipating the public is going to push us to test very soon. What should be our response to these requests?
With respect to landfills, that is an area of increasing attention. We started PFAS looking at it in drinking water. We started looking and communities first had dealings with it if it was an area of known contamination. We had a couple of sites where there was extensive historical use of firefighting foam. These sites, people were in there doing cleanup for other things, but then when they started testing for PFOA and PFAS, as you know, knowledge developed on this, they found it. So some of it's been near industrial uses, some of it's been near these firefighting uses at, you know, either airports or military facilities. As we look at PFAS, you know, the questions about looking at landfills, you know, picking up monitoring there to see as we look for other things, including dioxins, is becoming a growing issue. What I'd recommend for Nantucket, there are places where we're starting to, particularly if it's related to, you know, exploration of contamination or people want to know more, landfills are areas that we're spending more time on. I'd recommend that if Nantucket wanted to reach out to our regional office in Southeast Region, our regional director, Millie Garcia Serrano, she'd be able to talk to you about the profile of the community and how we would approach sampling, what we know about the landfill, and you know, help put a team together and see what we can do about that. The good news is Millie is very well familiar with the airport issues that you alluded to, and I think she would be a great resource for talking about what the next steps are if you're starting to think about PFAS sampling. So I'd encourage you to reach out to Millie Garcia Serrano. It's an area where I'd like to think we can be helpful on.
We've also got another resource posted by Mickey Nowak on the Massachusetts Sludge Disposal Survey. And I didn't click on the link, Mickey, but I think that might be the one that NEBRA did for the Clean Energy Center for Massachusetts.
That's correct. That survey's on their website, the NEBRA website. It's an interesting report. I'm sure there'll be more regional reports done on sludge disposal. It makes sense for all of New England to take on that issue.
Yeah, and I think NUIPIC is basing its methodology for the region on the methodology that was used for Massachusetts.
Yeah, correct. And I just want to mention one thing there about the sampling. If anyone's been to any PFAS seminars or talked about it, it's not as simple as just going out to your sludge, grabbing a sample, sending it off. I would highly recommend you talk with a lab that has experience with PFAS testing, and they bring out one of their personnel that has experience with clean sampling, because when you're sampling at parts per trillion level, contamination is very easy, and it's a little more complex issue than taking a regular sludge sample.
I think that's really good advice, and you know, even dealing with sludge versus the samples we take from drinking water, the contamination issue you talk about, Mickey, I've heard a lot about that. It's very easy if you're not following, you know, strict protocols. And then also just recognizing the difference in media. we at DEP, our Office of Research and Standards, if, you know, anybody is approaching this issue, you know, definitely reach out to our regional offices. We'll make sure we're connecting with our Office of Research and Standards so that if people are talking about sampling, it's, you know, we all agree that this is an effective protocol designed to get us what we're looking for and avoid some of the issues that might come up either as a result of contamination or, you know, there's a difference in approach to how you sample sludge. One thing I neglected to mention at the beginning, and I should have, when we're together, there is discussion always about the economic impacts, and we're all mindful that the utilities and these systems are facing likely significant revenue impacts as a result of this emergency. I don't have any official Commonwealth updates. I will note that I guess there was some action in the U.S. Senate this week. The U.S. House Heroes Bill passed a while ago. Now the Senate's moving on it. It seems like they're taking different approaches to municipal and state funding, but I'm mindful of the fact that, you know, there does seem to be some movement on that. I know we're all here at the state level on a continuing budget for right now while the federal picture gets clearer. And if we hear anything in light of the fact that we saw some movement, we'll make sure to stay in touch and trade notes. But it did look like the Senate started undertaking some legislative action this week. With that, if anyone would like to pose a question or a comment and unmute themselves, this would be a good time.
And if you're on the phone, unmute yourself by hitting *6.
Well, if we don't have any takers, what we will do is, as I've indicated, we'll post the EPA training information on our website. You know, John Murphy's putting information about the licensing training and exams up on the website as well. In the meantime, if we hear any developments on any of our topics, we will be sure to push out a last email or use other methods of communication, before our next call. And I believe our next call is scheduled for August 12th. Thank you for participating today. And also thank you once again for everything you're doing to make sure that our waters are managed effectively. And, I hope everybody stays well, stays safe, and stays healthy, and that you all have a good day.